Welcome to another audience interview brought to you by Speed Art Museum and Kentucky Tourism Arts and Heritage Cabinet. I'm your host and publisher of Audience Magazine and the printed playbills for your performing arts here in Louisville, Doug Driesbach. Today we're excited to sit down with singer-songwriter Paul Thorne, who will be the first live and in-person concert back at Old Forester Paris Town Hall on Friday, August 27th. We're all ready for live music, especially indoors with the talents and the likes of Mr. Thorne. And after over a year of being shut out of performing, musicians and entertainers have really had to pivot to do everything from live streams to playing shows with no audiences and all kinds of things. So we're excited to catch up with Paul today, hear about his journey through the pandemic and how he adjusted to what we're looking forward to be performing live again on stage. Welcome, Paul. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. How you doing?
Well, I can't complain, and if I did, nobody would probably listen to me anyway.
I bet your mama cares.
Mama probably cares. So, as mentioned, you're going to be the first live and in-person indoor concert for Paris Town Hall here in Louisville on August 27th. That's a pretty big deal. I know you have a few shows under your belt already, or will have by then, and we're excited to have you back on stage. But what are you most excited about being live on stage, and what were your feelings the first time you got back in front of a live audience?
Well, when the pandemic hit, I didn't have a gig for like over 9 months. And then during that time, like a lot of people, I caught COVID. And it put me under the weather for about 2 weeks. I laid in the bed, with feeling rough. But I survived that. And then when I started back, I started doing a few gigs, just me and my guitar without my band. And just mainly because half the venues were closed permanently, and when the venues that were open were at half capacity, so there was really no money there to take the band out. I made my money off ticket sales, and everything just got obliterated. And so we all, myself and a lot of other people, we felt a hit. It was like we lost our jobs. But during the pandemic, I actually, aside from losing money, which I can get past that, that's no big deal. I'm fine on that. But what really was beautiful about it is for 9 months or more than that, I got to literally be at home. When you do this for a living, people don't realize how much you have to be away from home and what a strain it puts on any family. And so even though the pandemic was bad and I got sick and all that, the majority of it, I was in heaven, to be honest with you, because I could take my daughter to the soccer games. I got to go to all the things that I miss a lot of, football games, just stuff like dragging the garbage out to the road. I mean, just little mundane things that seem horrible to some people. It was like, felt like I was in Disneyland.
I bet. Well, during COVID and those shows, we saw a lot of musicians doing different things from, streaming from their home, or I've got a friend who took guitar lessons from a guy who's normally touring, so just to stay active, stay visible. How did you spend your time during you mentioned family time with your kids and things like that, which is awesome. I know you have a new album coming out, so I'm sure some time went to that. How did you stay busy and kind of in performing shape?
Well, we cut our new record at the end of 2019, right before the pandemic. But when the pandemic, shut the whole world down, it would have been foolish to put a record out when there's no way to tour, no way to promote it. So we waited till it get back on track, which looks like it's going that way. And my new record's coming out in July. In August of this August. And we have a better shot of getting it heard now because we can go out and tour and, we can do all the things you need to do to promote a record. But other than that, during the time off, I did things like, I'm an artist. I did a lot of artwork, just did stuff around the house that needed to be done. And like I said, I wrote a few songs and, life is moving on. And, we all got hit pretty hard, but when you get hit hard, you got to get back up, And so I'm in the getting back up phase right now. With a lot of good things on the horizon, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of getting hit and getting back up, you grew up in Tupelo, Mississippi, where from what I've read and understand, you had a stint as a boxer for a while. So how did you go from, I guess, getting into boxing to realizing that you were a singer and a songwriter, and how did you know you wanted to go into music?
Well, my dad's a Pentecostal preacher, so I grew up singing in church. That's where I really got my start. And you can't believe hardly anything on Wikipedia because it's so hit and miss. I was a boxer. I was ranked number 29 in the world at one time. My record is not what it shows on Wikipedia. I had 14 professional fights. And my professional record was 14-4. What they have on I can't even stand to look at my Wikipedia because it's just the things I'm noted for. It's not, a lot of it's just, I've done some things, but it's a poor Wikipedia. So if you want to find out a beat about me, that's not that great on Wikipedia. You have to just dig around and look for stuff.
I should just ask you, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, speaking,
but yeah, I was a boxer, and you know, the thing I'm most known for is a fight I lost, which was against I got to fight one of the greatest fighters that ever lived, Roberto Duran. I don't know how old you are, so I don't know if you even know who that is.
I don't. I apologize.
That's all right. But you know, in the boxing world, in the '80s, when I was boxing, Roberto Duran was, you know, he was in the top five greatest of all time. Yeah, he was up there with anybody that knows boxing knows who Roberto Duran is. Nobody. It's not mandatory that people know anything about boxing, though. Just let me throw that in.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, we're excited for you coming to Louisville in a couple of months, and as you know, being a boxer, home of Muhammad Ali, and that's always exciting. But you've been here a few times before. You played the Brown Theater. I think another opportunity to come in. What do you like about Louisville? And when you come in and out of shows, do you get a chance to go around town pre and post show, or do you generally come in, perform, and head out?
Well, they got the Muhammad Ali Museum, which is great and awesome. And I think Ali is the only person I ever heard of that got a museum made about them while they were still alive.
That
I can't think of anybody else.
Yeah, no, I think you're probably right. Yeah, yeah. Well, he's a big deal. He carries a lot of great messages, and he was an inspirational hero for a lot of people.
Yeah, I always say Ali was the greatest. I'm just the goodest. I'm the goodest, and he's the greatest.
He's the greatest. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Well, Louisville's a great, great place to be. When you go to these towns, do you get to get out at all?
Yeah, you know, well, it depends on where we're coming from. Mm-hmm. When you're on tour, it's not like you're going on a vacation. You're going to work, you know, and I enjoy my work, but it's not a vacation. It's rare that we get like a day to just, you know, just go see the sights. It happens some, but not as much as people think.
Mm-hmm. On your tour, I know musicians change from show to show or person to person, but when you go on your tour, do you have a kind of a set list for the full tour, or do you change it up every show or have some improv folded in? How do you go about your in-show songs and song list?
Every year we'll work up two or three sets, and we'll just alternate them city to city, you know. Yeah, I play a lot of old stuff that people that are fans want to hear, and then you know, I'm really proud of this new record we put out, and I'll be playing a few songs off my new record too.
Tell me about the new record. It's called Never Too Late to Call. Is it out right now, and where can people listen to it?
It's coming out in August, but right now you can hear there are two songs available on Spotify, two tracks off the record. But you know, it's just, you know, I hadn't put out an album of original material in 6 years. And so it's been a minute. But there's a lot of reasons for that. One, the main one, I didn't feel like I had enough. I had lots of songs, but I didn't think I had any real good ones. And I wanted to wait till I had some songs I really felt good about. And I do now. And I'm really proud of these songs. There's a lot of things autobiographical on this, you know. Like a lot of people during the pandemic, drinking became an issue. You know, like I was, I've drank for quite a while, but not even before the pandemic, my drinking had gotten a little bit out of hand, and I could see it was taking a toll of me in a bad way. So I quit drinking. Basically, the point of what I'm saying. A lot of this, not the whole record, but there's a lot of stuff on the record that's talking about, you know, I guess this is, for lack of a better term, there's a lot of songs on here that are like my getting sober song, if that makes sense. Yeah. You know, the songs that I wrote when I was drinking too much. Yeah. And, you know, it can sneak up on anybody. I mean, just two straight laced guys who live in my neighborhood, who just seem like normal functioning, you know, high functioning people, had to go to rehab during the pandemic because, you know, during the pandemic, people just started drinking. I mean, more than usual, and drinking too much. You know, when I do shows, I'll say sometimes, how many of y'all drinking accelerated during the pandemic? And they all just start laughing and raising their hands. It's just, you know, it can sneak up on you, you know, and so I laid it aside, and I feel a thousand times better. You know?
Well,
but anyway, some of the record touches on it,
Well, it's interesting you say that. I'm a big fan of Jason Isbell, and I saw an interview with him, and he gave up drinking several years ago. But the interview was talking about at first he thought it was going to kind of mess with his creativity and songwriting. And what he found after he quit drinking was that it didn't. It actually inspired him to do more. Have you found that, or has it altered your creativity and songwriting since you stopped drinking?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, I said it took six years to write an album. Part of it is I didn't have great songs, but part of it, a lot of days I was waking up with a hangover. You know, you can't do nothing productive, you got a hangover. And it snowballed. The snowball got too big, you know, it just started out as a little snowball, and then it became an avalanche. So I decided I don't need it no more. And after I've got a little time under my belt, you know, I'm feeling so much better, you know. And you know, there's people that can drink, and it's fine. Some people can have a drink or two, and that's it. But it seemed like I couldn't do that anymore. So I don't need it no more. I'm happy.
Well, your music carries somewhat of a humorous side with some songs like I Don't Like Half the Folks I Love, Pimps and Preachers. It's a great day to whoop somebody's ass. But the meaning of each of them is serious, and it's real. How do you come up with your lyrics, and when do you realize that humor and music kind of go together and you've got a great talent for melding the two? How do you kind of come up with your songs?
Well, Pimps and Preachers was written because my father was a Pentecostal preacher, and his brother, my uncle, was a pimp. I just wrote about it. I mean, that's not fiction. Those are real people, you know. And as far as I don't like half the folks I love, I mean, who can't say that, you know? There's a reason we get together only once a year for Christmas and Thanksgiving, or twice a year. It's because that's all we stand, you know, sometimes. Some of our family, we love them. Some of our friends, we love them. But they are hard to be around. And you love somebody, but you don't necessarily like them.
Yeah, yeah. It seems like a lot of your music seems like it's got some blues, it has some rock vibe going on, and a little folky maybe at times. How would you describe your music and the goal of what you want it to be? How would you describe it?
Well, I don't. That's a hard question. I like to put empathy in my songs, and I like to make my songs where the listener feels like it's them I'm singing about. You know, because we all go through the same joys and the same hardships. It's just, we're all going through the same stuff. It's just people, we got different names, but we're all going through the same stuff. I want my music to resonate and to the listener. Now, I want them to, when they hear one of my songs, I want them to, after the song, say, I believe Paul knows exactly how I feel. Because I feel exactly the way you feel about what you just pick a category. We're all the same.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you have any musical inspirations as you've gone through your career, who you listen to and aspire to, I don't know about sound like, but that are inspirational for what you're creating?
Yeah, well, you know, I like songwriters. And when I say songwriters, these names get thrown around a lot, but there's a reason for it, because they're great. You know, like people like Chris Christopherson, or John Prine. I mean, those are songwriters, man. If you can write a song like them guys and aspire to be as good as them, you know, that's what I try to do. Because, you know, when I was a boxer, at my best, I was not even close to being what Muhammad Ali was, but I had something I could aspire to be, you know what I mean? I could try to be that great. I couldn't be that great, but I could try. And he showed an example. If you work on it, you know, you can do something, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I've got to ask, you being from Tupelo, the Delta Blues Museum is there. I've not been there. I've heard a lot of good things about it. I've read some good things about it. Have you had a chance to get in there to see some of the great blues musicians from the Delta?
I have not been to the museum, no. I played in Clarksdale, and I get it. I know it's all wonderful stuff, yeah, but I haven't seen it, no.
Okay, sounds good. So from a guitar-playing perspective, I dabble a little bit myself recreationally, not in front of audiences quite yet, but do you have a favorite guitar that you play, and or do you travel with several when you tour, and how do you pick that as part of your travel situation?
My favorite guitar I don't actually carry out with me. My favorite guitar is a 20-year-old Gibson Hummingbird, and the neck got broke off of it when I was out on tour one time, and then when I got a six, I just decided to retire it and leave it home, even though it's my favorite one. But the one I use on the road, actually, is I've got one of those carbon fiber guitars. You heard of those?
No.
Huh?
No.
It's made out of carbon fiber. It's made out of the same material they make spaceships out of. And heat, extreme heat, and extreme cold, neither one bothers it. So it never goes out of tune. You know, if you had a wooden guitar and you're like, maybe you're in the shade and you step out of the sun all at once, it'll go out of tune because the temperature affects the wood. But this carbon fiber guitar I got, it just stays in tune for the entire show. And it's not as pretty a guitar as my Hummingbird, but it's in a live situation, it's better. Some people are turned off by those carbon fiber guitars, but I think they're great.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we can't thank you enough for being with us today. I got a few quick hits is what I like to call them, just short answers, but hear a little bit more about Paul and what you are like personally. So to get started, what was your first guitar?
My first guitar was, my dad got me a Glenn Campbell Ovation acoustic six string.
Nice. Was that your favorite? Well, you just told me the Hummingbird was your favorite guitar, right?
That's my favorite one, yeah. But the most it's my favorite as far as playing. But my favorite sentimentally is the Glenn Campbell Ovation, which is the first one my dad bought me. It's sentimental, but it's not. To be honest, it's not that great of a guitar, but it's sentimental, and I keep it. I got it hung up on the wall of the house.
Nice, nice. What's your favorite song to play live?
That's a hard question. My favorite song to play live is the one that I figure out in my head that people want to hear next, you know?
Absolutely. You know, I asked a big bourbon distiller here in Louisville what they produce four or five different great bourbons. And I asked him what his favorite bourbon was, and he said, it's like having kids. He said, I love them all, but on any given day, I might like one just a little bit more than the other.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Different songs are special. It depends on what the situation calls for.
Yeah. Do you remember, what was your first live show in front of an audience?
I was at Estes Fish and Steakhouse when I was 5 years old. I was me and my ventriloquist dog telling jokes.
Nice. What's your, do you have a favorite place or city to play in?
No, I
like, there's so many places I like and so many people I like in different parts of the country. I can't say that enough. I like, there's things I like about everywhere I go. You know, I've talked about Muhammad Ali and, you know, great things that came out of Louisville. I love Louisville. The people are really nice to me, and they come to shows when I put on a show, and that's something, you know, I'm very thankful for.
Yeah. Is there a city that you haven't been to, but let me rephrase that. Is there a place that you'd like to play that you haven't played yet, whether it's a venue or a city or wherever that might be?
Not really. I mean, I can't think of anything in particular. I've played a lot of great places, I mean, in my life. And there'll be more to come, but, you know, I'm happy.
What about any musicians you'd like to jam with on stage, living or dead?
Elvis Presley.
That would be a treat.
Yeah, I'd like to play rhythm guitar in Elvis's band. I wouldn't want to go up there and try to do what he does, because he would pretty much outshine anybody, you know?
Yeah,
He had the gift. You know, he had just that little hit factor that you can't really define.
Mm-hmm. Well, Paul, thank you so much for your time today. In closing, can you tell us and the fans what we can expect of your show on August 27th at Old Forester's Paris Town Hall here in Louisville?
I mean, you know, I'm going to be singing my songs and doing my thing. You know, when the show's over, I always like to go out and shake people's hands, thank them for coming. I'm just looking forward to pressing the flesh with human beings again, you know. And I'm just excited about all the people from Louisville, friends and acquaintances, you know. Some people I don't know at all, but, you know, I still want to see you, so come on.
Well, we can't wait to have you, and thank you, everybody, for listening to another audience interview today brought to you by Speed Art Museum and the Kentucky Tourism Arts and Heritage Cabinet. We're excited to have Paul Thorne here in Louisville at Old Forester's Paris Town Hall on August 27th. Be sure to check out KentuckyPerformingArts.com to get your tickets today. It's going to be a great show. And Paul, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. You have a good one.